Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Very conveniently at Harold Grader. Harold, how's it going?
Try to keep it simple on that kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah. It's easy to find me.
Yeah,
no doubt. Great to see you. What a weekend of college football. Loved
it. I didn't really expect all that much out of this weekend, but usually when I don't expect things, that means that there's opportunities for some upsets out there. We only had one top 25 matchup. We know Oklahoma handled business there. Bryce Underwood looked like a freshman, but let's start with some upsets here.
Yeah.
I feel like I was one of the very few that thought Kenny Dillingham would figure it out. He would go on the road with his Arizona State team in front of all the cowbells, in front of the Mississippi State crowd, and find a way. But Mississippi State found a way. And at the end of that game, it's 20-17. Felt like Mississippi State was going to try to play for a field goal, but no. Here comes an absolute bomb from Blake Shapen to Brennan Thompson. Touchdown, 58 yards downfield. Still don't understand how Arizona State didn't have as many high safeties as possible in that situation. But here we are on Monday talking about a 24-20 win for Mississippi State after a 2-10 season last year.
Well, just to that one point about the end of the game, to your point, you were thinking they were playing for a field goal. Maybe Arizona State thought they were going to be playing for a field goal. Didn't work out that way.
That's not what they did.
Did not work out that way. Now, look, number one, I am thrilled for Jeff Lebby. He was needing a signature win. He got it. He got it at home. They were able to celebrate, had the field rush, carried the goalposts out of there. It does not get any better than that. However, let's take a step back from all of the emotion, all the excitement, and you look at how that game progressed and the flow of the game. Now, State jumped out there early. It was 17-0, 17-3 at the half. Whoa, we get to the fourth quarter, we got a tie ball game, right?
Yep.
Arizona State actually then they went up 20-17, and then all of this craziness all happened less than a minute to go in the ball game. Great throw, great catch, great run, and then they got a pick to seal it.
Yep.
Everybody goes crazy. A really good win for Mississippi State. However, I think you really got to hit the brakes a little bit, not get too carried away, just to say, okay, there are some things to work on. You know, and those, you hear it from coaches, Gabe. You've heard it all your life. I have too.
Yep.
There's nothing like being able to come off a win, and then you can push your guys a little harder. Because there are things that need to be fixed, but it's better to be able to, you know, go to the whip a little bit when you're coming down the final stretch, using the analogy of a racehorse there, of being able to do that coming off a win.
Yes, no doubt.
But again, happy for State. Not so happy for our friend Kenny Dillingham. And again, not to overreact, but was last year just a one-time right. flash in the pan because you had a great player like Scataboo? Or is it something bigger and better? I'd say Kenny and his guys have some work to do.
Yeah, I always am hesitant to crown Big 12 teams. From the year before, there's very few Big 12 teams, it seems like, at this point, that are just consistent enough to stay at the top of the conference. Yeah. And Iowa State, although I was going to say Kansas State, but we know what they did this past weekend. Not great. And then you have Utah, usually around there, and it looks like they're back up with Devin Dampier.
Yep.
But I always have my hesitation with trying to crown a team that has just come along in that Big 12. There's always parity, right? Yes. And last year, just for an example, the teams that were sort of picked at the top of that conference, Oklahoma State, saw how that ended up.
Yep.
Kansas didn't end up very well. And then finally, you had Arizona with Noah Fifita and Tet McMillan last year. They won 4 games. You know what I mean? Like, it is tough to stay on the top of that conference year to year. And then I will say this. At the very least, I expected more out of Sam Leavitt on the road against Mississippi State. He looked really bad. He's an experienced quarterback. He doesn't quite have an excuse to look the way he did on Saturday.
Give the credit to State. And one thing if we want to move on, I'll wrap up my State comments about this. Here in the last, 15 years or so, State fans are used to winning, having success. You know, they did it with Dan Mullen. They were having success with Mike Leach before his unfortunate passing. Now they hit some bumpy times in that transition from Leach and now to Jeff Lebby, who is well thought of in the coaching business.
Right.
Great coaching mind. And, you know, through the transfer portal, now you can go find some pieces and knit together a pretty good ball club. So hopefully for State, this one gets the chain catching the sprocket, so to speak, and they can get some momentum. But the next two are out of conference again. Games they should handle with relative ease. But then when you get back into conference play, you look at their schedule, man, oh man, Tennessee at A&M, at Florida. Huh? Texas, at Arkansas, Georgia, at Mizzou, Ole Miss. That's the season.
Yeah.
But, again, that's week in, week out in the SEC. Now, how many of those games will Mississippi State be favored in? We'll see. But hopefully, this one, they can build off of. And it's not a one-time, hey, we got caught up in the excitement and we were able to pull off an amazing play at the end to win this thing. We'll see.
But learning how to win,
for them, there is more success.
Learning how to win and building confidence heading into the SEC slate is the most important thing for them.
Absolutely.
All right, now, Florida's on the opposite side of this. Florida, coming into this week, was number 13 in the country. They're at home against South Florida. South Florida goes in, wins 18-16. Now, they didn't do it without Florida's help. I want to be very, very clear about that.
A great understatement there, my friend.
16-15, Florida's up, final drive, Byron Brown and South Florida offense start probably inside their own 20, thereabouts, right inside of it, and they start driving. It was 2nd and 10 at one point. There was a pass interference, and then they get an automatic first down. And then a few plays later, Florida's playing some okay defense. They get a stuff, I believe, on 2nd and 10. And they had an ejection because one of their defensive linemen decided to spit in the face of a South Florida player. And he gets a personal foul, unsportsmanlike conduct, another 15 yards, gifted to South Florida. They get it to the 50. They throw a screen pass. They gain about 25. And now they're set up for a field goal. As the 2-minute timeout's there, so they just sort of creep back down, keep creeping down. Florida decided not to let them score. I still don't quite understand that. Byron Brown had a couple of designed quarterback runs, and Florida tackled him. I was just like, let him score so you guys can go back down. They have a 20-yard field goal here. They're going to make it. There's no reason to avoid, allow them to just run out the clock and then kick that field goal as time expires. But that's exactly what they do. South Florida wins 18-16. Florida was absolutely stunned at the end of that game.
Florida, wow. Just when you thought maybe there were some good things on the horizon for them, they play like this. They looked really inept. Disorganized. You talked about the penalties. I think it was right at or maybe even over 100 yards in penalties. Some of those penalties killed their drives, extended the opponent's drive. They had a bad snap on a punt. And despite all of that, they still had that one-point lead late in the ball game.
Yeah.
But then, as you so well described, not so good on the clock management there, and what was the thought process? All of us would think, yes, let them score. We want to make sure there's time on the clock for my offense to get back in this thing, and then we go win the game, right?
Yeah.
I think Billy Napier is back to people questioning him. You know, what's his future? Were they looking at their next head coach across the field in Alex Golish?
Interesting thought.
Yeah. We'll see about that. So South Florida, one, is a really good football team.
Yep.
Tigers will see them here in late October. And Florida on the other side, you know, just like we were talking about Mississippi State, they still had that gauntlet of the SEC schedule to run. LSU, Texas, out of conference, Miami, then back into conference, Georgia, Tennessee, and then obviously the end of the year with Florida State. So, wow. Not sure if Florida bounces back from this, because there is a lot to get right. And can you do that in the short turnaround here? Not so sure. But the next one, I think, will point which way is this program headed? Which way is this team going? Which way is their season going? Because I said this last week. You know, we don't want to overreact from week one. I want to see teams for two or three games where, okay, this is what we think they are. I think we're kind of still feeling that out with a lot of teams. So for Florida, I think the next one kind of sets the tone for, okay, which way are they going? And then South Florida, really good team, maybe the best team in the American. Right now, you'd have to say so.
Yeah. I'd say they're the group of six favorite, too, for the college football playoff, and that's fair.
So we'll keep an eye on them, and we look forward to having them here in Memphis late in October to play the Tigers.
Yeah, and to your point about Florida's final penalty tally, you said it was for about 100 yards, 11 for 103. And I think the most frustrating part, for Florida fans at this point, and I completely understand it, is it feels like, for the most part, Billy Napier was saved, his job at least, by DJ Lagway. And the thought of, oh, when this guy starts,
right,
we're going to have national championship aspirations. We're not going to lose games like this. Non-con, we'll roll through. DJ Lagway starting now. And I don't think he's looked miserable by any stretch of the imagination. He's been fine. But the team's still making those same mistakes.
Yep.
Looking undisciplined. Looking uncomfortable. Not running the ball the right way. That's where I think I share, to a certain extent, even though I'm not a Florida fan, the frustration of Florida fans. Because you have this buildup, and Scott Strickland saying, oh, we're going to wait this out. Look at that kid, DJ Lagway.
Yeah.
And it's not working out how you expect it already. Game two.
Tough times in Gainesville.
No doubt. All right. Now, Alabama. Let's get to them. I guess we could call that some tough times, but they've had so many good times. I don't know if I feel all that bad. But they took out some frustration this weekend, didn't they?
They did.
Oh, gosh. Why'd they have to do that to poor UL Monroe? I know that Saban lost to him once upon a time, but 73-0.
Yeah, I was at that game.
73-0. Yeah. I have a very specific question about this.
Yeah.
Because obviously we're not going to, like, change our opinion because they beat the crap out of UL Monroe. But it occurred to me that Alabama's reputational damage and Kalen DeBoer's reputational damage after week one's pretty vast. Like, it's pretty substantial. I want, like, honest opinion here. Like, your opinion. Do you think they'll be able to change the narrative on their head coach and on their team, and really the program, before this season is over. And how would they do that? I think ultimately it would be college football playoff appearance.
Yeah.
Sort of revitalizing your season, getting some big wins.
The short answer to your question, Gabe, what do they have to do? Can they do it? The reputation?
Right.
Yes, by winning.
Yes.
And looking good, playing good ball in winning. You know, DeBoer said, going back to a week ago Sunday, the day after the loss, hey, these guys came in, they were focused, he was feeling good about his team. And he said that throughout the week. So we see a big blowout game. It goes to what we were just talking about some of these other ball clubs, is having confidence and playing well. But at Alabama, it is an entirely different deal. And it's all about, quote unquote, the standard. And the standard is playing focused, disciplined football. And not what they were against Florida State, but more of what we saw this past week. And can they sustain it? That's the key. And going week to week to week to week, getting better and playing to the Alabama standard. Now, you could call that the Saban standard.
Yep.
They're one and the same. But that is now the expectation at Alabama. And you got to remember, you know, Coach was there, what, how many years was Saban there?
Oh.
17,
yeah.
Was it?
It was approaching 20, just not quite there.
So you have basically a generation of folks who only know one thing at Alabama, and that's winning at the highest level, and that is, quote-unquote, the standard. Now, I think DeBoer and his guys did a good job of self-evaluating as, okay, what we're doing isn't working, how we're approaching it isn't working, what do we do? Well, they obviously made some changes this past week. The team responded to that. The team got focused. Now, again, can they sustain that? And they have a pretty good test this week. They're playing at home against Wisconsin.
Yep.
So can they continue that against a Big Ten team? We shall see. And again, don't want to sound like a broken record here, but you look at the schedule. And again, this is it in the SEC. You know, they're at Georgia. Vandy, no pushover. Obviously, they learned that lesson last year. At Mizzou, they do have Tennessee at home. Then they're at South Carolina. They have LSU at home, Oklahoma, and then at Auburn. So can they run that table? Probably not.
Right.
We shall see. But I would say to the question of the reputation and...
Will they get it back?
Will they get it back? Yes, you can do it by winning, and I would say making the playoff obviously saves that.
Yeah.
If they don't, then they're a problem.
I feel like the opportunity to circle, and I know you can't look past Wisconsin, even though I think they have a quarterback injury to Billy Edwards Jr., their quarterback. But the game you circle is that first SEC game on the road against Georgia. Truth of the matter is, if you win that game, I feel like a lot of that reputation is you know, restored to a certain extent. But we'll see. We will see. And also, Florida State, I'm not saying Alabama should have gotten beaten the way they did. And I'm not saying that they should have gotten stuffed and given up that many pressures as an offensive line. They're too talented for that. It didn't look like they were prepared well enough. But I will say this.
Yeah.
Florida State looks like a damn good football team. And I know they played, what, A&M Commerce, which is now East Texas A&M this weekend. But they looked like they were playing East Texas A&M, if that makes it sense.
Yeah.
77-3. Mike Norvell, it feels like he's sort of back in his comfort zone to a certain extent.
Seems that way.
Right? Yeah.
And we hope so.
Yeah, and Tommy Castellanos, very efficient. Deuce Robinson, if you don't know that name, get that name in your vocabulary. That guy was unbelievable. I think he caught for 177 yards or something like that, 3 touchdowns. And he's got that Johnny Will. I don't know what it is about Norvell and those tall wide receivers, Harold. I don't know if you've seen that, but Johnny Wilson was 6 foot eight. That was that 13-1 team. Deuce Robinson about 6 foot seven. And he's doing what he's supposed to do. All right. But anyway, let's go to the ACC on that note.
The ACC, okay.
Clemson. Let's go. Clemson loses to LSU week one, and then week two they come out against this this team in the Sun Belt. The Troy Trojans.
Yep.
And it was 16-0 Troy at half. Now, to give Clemson credit, I guess, they come back in the second half, score 27 unanswered point, win 27-16. But I think you probably agree with me. Bit too much of a struggle for Clemson this past
weekend. Yes, or as they say over the Clemson. Yes. Too much of a struggle. Makes you scratch your head a little bit. What's going on there? Hand it to Troy. Big opportunity. They responded. You know, obviously couldn't close it out. But it does make you wonder and ask questions about the Clemson situation with Dabo. I'm not sure where we're going with this, with Clemson, and what, as far as what does this season look like for them? Because going in all summer, they were the talk of the ACC.
Sure.
They were talked about being a potential national championship team. Well, if they're going to get there, and they got through this one.
Sure.
And again, like we were talking earlier, it's a whole lot easier to coach them hard off a win than it is off a loss. So I would suspect they're going to be coaching these guys really, really hard because there are things to fix there. And again, they survived it. So everything that they thought they have to play for is all still there. But, is there another one that's going to jump up and bite them?
Yeah, how ironic would it be that it seems like the talk before the season and in the offseason had shifted to Dabo's favor. It's like, oh, he hadn't gone away.
Right.
You know, they have an experienced quarterback, experienced wide receivers. That D-line's the best in the country. So, like, everybody was drinking the Clemson Kool-Aid this offseason. As opposed to the past 5 years, Harold, which I'm sure you'll remember all the preseason talk. All it was about was Dabo and, oh, he's never going to win a national championship again. He has no chance. He doesn't take portals.
Yeah.
Portalers. He doesn't do any of this. He doesn't do that. It would be really ironic if we got into this season and this was the year that they fell flat on their face, considering it felt like everybody was hopping right back on board with Clemson going into this season.
Oh, everyone definitely did.
Right.
But you look
top
at this,
five team in the preseason.
You look at this game. Obviously, as you said, you know, Troy had a big lead at the half, 16-3, I think it was. But looking at the second half, the Clemson defense responded, and they pitched a shutout there in the second half. So a big positive there for Clemson. And so there's a little bit of a history there at Clemson where defense has always been a priority and one of the things they hung their hat on for the successes they have enjoyed in the past. So, look, I don't care what league you're in, you got to play defense. They showed some life there in the second half, maybe some adjustments there. But they got away with it, and those may not happen in against some better teams and in conference play. But everything that they started the year wanting to play for is still there.
Yeah, and they picked off our old guy, Goose Crowder.
Yeah.
Old Goose in the third quarter, first two drives, intercepted.
Yeah, let's talk about Goose.
Yeah, let's do it.
His real name is Will, but he goes by Goose.
I like Goose better.
Yeah.
I like Goose better. Speaking of Troy, thank you for transitioning me to a certain extent. Tigers may have a challenge on their hands based on what we saw this past weekend. Troy going into Clemson and having a 16-3 lead at half, that says something. Sure.
Yeah. You know, it's very similar to the Memphis game against Georgia State. I know we're going to be talking about that one. Maybe we can meld it all together right here, where tough first half. The opponent pitches a shutout in the second half, which was the situation in this Clemson-Troy game. You mentioned Goose, the quarterback, Goose Crowder. Three interceptions, two of them in the second half.
Yep.
They also had a failed fake field goal, went amiss. But Crowder, good game overall. It's hard to say that when the guy throws
go on the road to Clemson and throw for 225.
Yeah.
As a Troy quarterback, 19, I'll give you some credit.
Absolutely, a little bit of glimmer of positiveness there, similar to what happened to the Tigers or what the Tigers did. They were in a fisticuffs there in not literally, but
yeah,
And
the first half was close.
First half was close against Georgia State. Tigers make some adjustments. Defense, and I give Jordan Hankins and his guys on the defensive side. Pitched a shutout in the second half, just like this. These two games kind of mirror themselves.
Yeah.
And then the Tigers, got it lit up in the second half and got a late pick six. So, Troy at Troy, look, I've never been there, but the history is there. They always play tough at home. You can't go in there. I don't care what we did, and I say we as a Tiger fan, no matter, you can't look back at last year. That was here. You're going on the road to Troy. And my understanding is the team's going to be staying in Montgomery, which is a little bit of a drive. So, they got to deal with those factors. And, again, early game, I think it's an 11 o'clock Central game. So there's another factor, going on the road. A little bit of challenge. I'll stick with that word. I was going to say something, but I'll stick with the word challenge. Different variables involved. A team that's going to play hard at home. But again, the Tigers should win. And again, if the Tigers are going to meet their expectations and what their goals are for the year, you have to go win games like this.
Yeah, no doubt. 100%. There should be no excuse. But the point I'm making is I didn't expect Troy to be in that game this past weekend, and they were, and it makes me rethink maybe how easy I thought this game was going to be before the season. Because we know last year Memphis handled business against Troy at home very easily. Just disposed of.
And if I'm Ryan Silverfield, you look at that, you probably are glad to see that because that gets your guys' attention.
Yes.
Hey, we can't just roll in there to little old Troy, Alabama, and here we are, the big guys, and just roll the ball out there and expect to win. No. So take a positive away from the Tiger side of that. Okay, we know we've got to be focused, have a good week of practice, and take care of our business on Saturday morning, 11 o'clock.
I am curious your thoughts, and this is just opinion.
Yeah.
We're in the opinion business here, Sports Talk Radio. But what have you thought of their offense so far? And I know it's not against great competition.
Talking about the Tigers.
Yeah, Tigers. Memphis Tigers.
Well, we knew that the running ability of Lewis was a piece they've added to the puzzle that they just haven't had in the previous quarterbacks. Because that's not what they were. I'm a bit concerned that there's not more of a passing game.
Okay. That's fair.
No touchdown throws against Georgia State.
Right.
He did run, Brendan did run for a touchdown.
He also didn't throw an interception.
It was
0-0.
Yeah. I'd like to see a little bit more there.
Sure.
But what they're doing so far is working. They're having an effective run game. Glad to see Sutton Smith back and doing well. Again, he had, almost 80 yards Saturday night. But I would like to see a little bit more through the air with the Tigers.
Right. I think they're really...
That helps everything. Because if the opponent knows you're really not going to put the ball up much, eventually then they can pack it in on your run game.
I think they're really... And I don't... this is just my assumption through the first two games. I think part of it, because I talked to Ryan last week about, and he was very open and honest with me to be very, serious about it. He was very open and honest. I said, do you, against a team like Chattanooga, an FCS team that is viewed in an inferior light to your program, I think the narrative that pops up is always that people save plays. They get Fenella. And he basically said, you know,
I get that.
It's twofold. Yes, we do try to save some things, but also.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So with how the game goes sometimes, when you get these big leads, why would I do the double reverse pass when I'm up by 14? You know what I mean? So
I get
that's part of it as well. But I think they're trying to also, on top of that, give Brendan Lewis some easy looks to get him some confidence through the early going of the season. Because he's thrown for 199 and 196 and been very efficient. He was 16 for 20 this past weekend against Georgia State. So I don't think they're risk averse when it comes to throwing the football, putting the football in the air. I just think they're trying to keep it a little bit vanilla until they probably get to that Arkansas game where you're probably going to have to open it up.
Yeah,
because Arkansas's not going to let you run for 205 or 250 when you get out there against them. They're going to be They're going to be a lot more rugged against the run. For sure.
I can buy into what you're saying about the Tiger passing game.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Well, I buy into whatever you say, Harold, when you come in here on Mondays. And I appreciate you joining. We'll do it again next week.
Gabe, thank you. It's fun. Go get them.
Yes, sir.
Have a great week. Looking forward to this week's game.
Yes, sir. He is Harold Grader, Associate Executive Director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl on X at Harold Grader. Now it's time to get into the blitz right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show. And we have week two votes of confidence. And a familiar name that may be a senior advisor for the College Football Playoff Committee. We'll talk about that next. 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Now, the biggest stories. Overloading the line. A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show. 92.9 FM, ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
Florida head coach Billy Napier, fresh off a loss at home to South Florida, has been given the vote of confidence from AD Scott Strickland. Here's a few quotes from the letter he sent out today on social media. I wanted to let you know that Billy Napier will continue as head football coach of the Florida Gators. I am confident that Billy will meet the challenges and opportunities ahead. We will work alongside him to support any changes needed to elevate Gator football. Week two, vote of confidence for Billy
Napier. That's the earliest I can remember, to be completely honest with you. Unless we're counting like off-season votes of confidence, like right after the season ends. Hey, we're going to stick with this guy. He's got one of those before from Scott Strickland as well. But like in the season, as you start playing games, I think this is the earliest I can remember. And when it comes to votes of confidence, I call them dreaded votes of confidence because you never want to see it. That means that you're screwed. That means that the fan base is turned against you and the AD's doing everything he can to tell the fan base, hey, relax for now. We're gonna hold on to this guy at least through the rest of the season. It's just bad all around for Billy Napier. And I don't blame Florida fans for feeling the way that they do. I talked about it a little bit earlier off the top of the show. There's so many things about that team that just show they don't quite latch on to their head coach. The penalties just pop up on a consistent basis. They had 11 for 103 in that game against South Florida, but I think the two that matter the most are the ones on the final drive of the game.
Yes.
What are we doing? It's second and 10, and you get a defensive pass interference on South Florida's end of the field. just be more careful with your hands. Don't be so handsy in that situation. Then, on that first and 10, Florida stuffs South Florida's run. Stuffs it. And here comes their D-tackle spitting directly in a South Florida player's face. 15 more yards. The next play, literally the next play after that, is a screen pass that's 7 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Two Florida defenders have a chance to tackle it. They don't tackle it. And here goes South Florida for about a 25-30-yard gain, set themselves up for the win. In situations like that, at home, you have to be more disciplined. And when it comes to discipline, it has to be on the head coach. It has to be. There's no other person to put that on. Yeah, you can put it on players, but who controls the players? Who coaches up the players? Yes, that would be Billy Napier, the head coach. And then, like, just looking back even in the first half, South Florida was given a first down on a legal sub on a fourth down. USF ended up getting a field goal, getting points out of that drive. There was a false start in the red zone on a first down where it looked like Florida was going to score, and they end up not getting a touchdown. They settle for a field goal instead. And then here's the other thing. Two touchdowns in that game called back due to penalties for Florida. It just seems like a team that's not disciplined enough to deal with the SEC, to deal with a non-conference slate like they have this year. And here's the thing. We're past the Billy Napier is being saved by DJ Lagway stage, because I think that's what it's been the past couple of years, especially last year, where you had Graham Mertz running out there, but at the same time, you knew you had this five-star in DJ Lagway who was going to take the program to new heights, who's going to step in, be that Heisman candidate that was going to win you 10 to 11 games, get you into the college football playoff. We're past those days. DJ Lagway is the starter. DJ Lagway's in there. What else can save Billy Napier from being fired from this job? I don't think there is anything else. And that's why you get a vote of confidence in week two, which basically should tell you, without directly telling you, he's on the chopping block. It's just a matter of time.
Now I call on all of Gator Nation to continue standing behind Billy and his dedicated team while we work together to build a championship program. Week two. Not great. Not great for the Florida Gators.
I don't think they're a bad team. I want to make that clear. And I don't necessarily even think Billy Napier is a bad coach.
I think it's a weird fit.
I don't even know if I'm there. I just don't think he is.
I don't think he matches Florida.
I don't think he is good enough as a coach to get Florida over the top in the conference in the situation that they find themselves in the SEC.
Let me ask you this.
I had hesitation about it when he was hired, and I certainly have hesitation now.
Let me ask you this. The coach that beat him on Saturday.
Yeah.
A lot of people have been saying.
So let's discuss.
Maybe he should go down to Gainesville.
Let's discuss. Who would be next? Alex Golesh would be a guy I would absolutely reach out to. Right? Like, the Heupel tree is what it is. I think that he runs similar offensive sort of schemes as Jeff Lebby. And we see Jeff Lebby in year two getting a signature win against the number 12 team in the country. Talked about that earlier. Mississippi State seems to be better, more improved. Tennessee, where he came from before he went to South Florida, is still rolling with Josh Heupel. And coming from that tree should tell you at least he can elevate a program. Clearly familiar with Florida, being the head coach at South Florida. He would be a guy that makes sense. But here's my problem. Florida fans are so... I've seen lists pop up over the weekend. And Florida fans, they think it's 08. They think Tim Tebow's on campus still. They think they're winning national championships. They think Urban Meyer,
spin the block.
They think he could spin the block. But I saw a list, and the first three candidates to me... Which it's like you guys have this view of yourself that is so unrealistic. You have to get over it. The first two names on this these lists, a couple of lists I saw, Dan Lanning and Marcus Freeman. What are you talking about? That you're never getting your hands on those guys.
Why would they leave their situation to go to Florida?
Oregon probably has the biggest bankroll in college football right now because of Dan Lanning's relationship with Phil Knight. They're successful no matter what they throw out there. Dante Moore, my guy, is balling through 2 weeks. They just beat Oklahoma State, a Power Four program who's had success in the past under Mike Gundy, 69-3.
I could not believe that score.
It was unbelievable. It looked like an FCS game. It looked like an FCS game. And then Marcus Freeman made the natty last year with Notre Dame and clearly has a big bankroll. I think the third name on the list that I saw was Lane Kiffin. Lane has balked at the idea of leaving Ole Miss. Now, once upon a time, early in his Ole Miss days, I thought maybe he would leave for a job like Florida. But he's had opportunities, it seems like. It seems like people have reached out to him since he's been at Ole Miss. But he seems very comfortable in his own shoes. And the other thing Florida fans need to realize in the NIL and house settlement era, you fund your program like an SEC program. But you fund your program like a middle-of-the-pack SEC program.
Mm.
You're not on the Alabama, Georgia. You're not on that level anymore. You're probably in line with a school like Ole Miss until you have more success than you're having right now. So I think Florida fans are very unrealistic about the names that are being brought up right now. Alex Golesh, Glenn Schumann at Georgia. To me, I would start with those two names.
I think Golesh would be great.
Those are the two names I would start with. Because clear upgrade at Florida. They have some ties to the SEC. It seems like it would be a decent fit. But stop with that. Like, I put a top five of just, like, SEC programs when they have a coaching search and they know that their coach is going to get fired. This is usually what the top five looks like.
Nick Saban, Bear Bryant.
This is literally, here we go. This is the top five I put together of because it really is kind of my favorite pastime to watch SEC fan bases trip over themselves when looking for a new coach.
This is my top five.
One, Nick Saban. Two, Miami Jimmy Johnson. Three, Bear Bryant's ghost.
Yeah.
Four, Herman Boone, but he has to be played by Denzel Washington. And then five, Bob Stoops. Bob Stoops keeps coming up, and he has shown no interest in ever getting back into college coaching. So, yeah, there's that. That's how most of the Florida lists I saw pop up over the weekend look like.
College football playoff is targeting former Virginia Tech and Memphis coach Justin Fuente as its new football senior advisor. Speaking of someone who doesn't want to get in coaching anymore.
Yeah, this man just, like, he keeps getting offered great gigs.
Yes, he does.
This offseason, he ends up getting offered and taking the color commentary job at TCU. So that's what he's doing now. But now he may be a senior advisor, football senior advisor on the college football playoff committee. Seems like a decent gig. And listen, you said it. I don't think he ever has any hunger to get back into college football coaching, but this one removes him a step to where he doesn't have to deal with going and recruiting 17 and 18-year-olds who want a bag, who want $1 million before they step on campus, which I think is one of the biggest things he despises about this day and age. Whether you think that's right or wrong, I don't blame him for feeling that way. I mean, when he came up in Memphis, he was recruiting two stars that and walk-ons that barely had scholarships. Okay, and then now, if he was at Virginia Tech still, he'd have to pay his starting quarterback $1.5 million to stay. So, like, I get his gripe, but in this role, it seems like all he'd have to do is help the advisory board with plans for the college football playoff going into the future, help the health of college football. I think he's a trusted name. He's a guy that I would trust in that realm. But college football playoff committee and just the college football playoff, they have so many different moving parts. They have TV contracts. I am curious how much of a say-so he would have in matters having to do with the college football playoff. But I think this would be cool if he ultimately takes it, and it feels like he should.
Seems like a good mind to have on.
Yep, no doubt. Now, that'll do it for the Blitz. One more segment left of the day. Let's go ahead and rewind when we return for this Monday edition of the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. We are excited to have with us today Rob Brown, Senior Vice President and General Manager of Caesars Entertainment at Horseshoe Tunica. Rob, for our listeners out there, I try to tell them all the time, But for our listeners out there who have not been to Caesar's Sportsbook inside Horseshoe Tunica in a while or maybe ever, tell them a little bit about the area.
Yeah, so we have a whole new sportsbook area that comes complete with over 20 televisions. We have these recliners that are state-of-the-art, more comfortable than you have at home, I'm willing to bet. We have live betting. We have betting at kiosks. We have in-game betting. We have food that we bring right to you, right from Guy Fieri's restaurant. We have food specials. We got a lot going on.
Yep, no doubt. And college football, it's here. We're going on to week three, and it feels like all the local teams are balling right now. Mississippi State with a nice win over number 12 Arizona State. We have Ole Miss undefeated. The Vols are undefeated. The Tigers are undefeated. What's happening at Caesar's Sportsbooks or Caesar's Sportsbook on Saturdays? And you know, tell me a little bit about what you guys have in store.
So, I like to highlight is that was an amazing, and maybe one for the ages there with Mississippi State upsetting right. Arizona State. That was ridiculous, right? And you talk about what we have going on, the energy and life in the sports book when they hit that last minute touchdown there, that unexpected touchdown there was that's what I wish I could just bottle and have all the time as far as an atmosphere here at the property. And you know, when I looked at last week's slate of games, there was a couple headliners, but nothing really crazy. But yet there's a lot of money to be made, if you will, with the upsets and with the lines moving and all the excitement going on. And I look at this upcoming weekend, I think, maybe even better, right? Like, there's a lot of great games. And like I said a moment ago, it really comes down to that excitement you get when you're in an atmosphere like this that you can't get at home when you're high-fiving the person, the stranger next to you and that kind of energy. It's really a great place to watch a game.
And holler at me about game day eats.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Before I let you roll.
Absolutely. So we have a thing called Caesar Eats where you scan a QR code or you can text either one. We bring you food from Guy Fieri's. We have game day specials that include dollar wings. We have the pulled pork nachos. We have several things that are really tailored to this football experience and just elevate it to another level.
Can't beat it. Well, Rob, I appreciate it.
Thank you, Gay. Appreciate you guys.
Yes, sir. Well, college football fanatics, if you want to enjoy game day done right, head to Caesar's Sportsbook inside Horseshoe Tunica. You must be 21 or older to gamble. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.